Impulses and Perspectives, the DIKT expert talk hosted by Nikolai Baer.
Hello and welcome to a new edition of Impulses and Perspectives. Today I'm talking to Richard Polifka. He is an active scientist at the CERN in Geneva or near Geneva, and he's founder of AI Consulting. Hi, Richard.
Nikolai, thank you very much for the invitation.
So the Corona crisis brought a lot of new things. People work in home office. Students do a big leap into digitization. They have to do homework now online. And so all the world is talking about AI, big data, and maybe also the solution for the Corona crisis will be connected to AI. So is that a good way to find like a vaccine or a medicine for the coronavirus or the COVID-19 virus?
Absolutely, you're spot on. Actually, as a matter of fact, it was an AI company called Blue Dot, which already in 31st of December 2019, first time reported that they see something like a outbreak coming, because what they do with the help of AI, they are analyzing multiple sources of text and website publications, government releases, etc. And they could pull all the different information together, and they were starting to see patterns how that something is coming. So that was already the very first thing. But you are absolutely right. The AI, which is able to, the strength of AI is analyzing this huge amounts of data, which is really not possible for a human, and finding patterns and hidden correlations, which also for us it would be very difficult to spot. So it's a natural candidate to use, really, and it was also done, for example, for the genome sequencing of the virus. That was done with the help of AI. And then, of course, the next step is to find the right vaccination. So typically, you could do this in two ways. You could sort of program in the chemical reactions you might think are the important ones, and then you try all kind of possibilities, because that's as well where AI is very good, like repetitive task with just a little small change of the parameters to really explore all possible solutions. Or actually there are techniques called natural language processing, and there basically there are algorithms which can scan through all world's database on whatever topic you would like, but in this case obviously it would be virology and the COVID-19. So these algorithms can scan this and can propose what has been done before and worked, and maybe it could be tried this time. So this is the way how AI actually can help with the development of the vaccination.
So it's more or less a matter of speed and variation. So the AI can do things faster and in a big more field of varieties than the human. And who is in the lead there in the pharmaceutical industry, for example?
There are many new companies which are basically the whole world is now trying to really strive for the same goal. And I would say it's a competition between various companies or providers, so I wouldn't dare to really name one outstanding. But I would say either if you have a pharmaceutical company which is already large enough, they must have by now recognized the power of AI in drug development, because that's per se not a new topic. Yeah. So the big players typically already have that in the house and can use this to enhance their potential to find the vaccine. Or there is a new sort of way of approaching this, which is really a technological startup with some subject matter experts in the team who would be really targeting going after the solution for the vaccination. And then, of course, you have all the university research, which is, I believe, combined in the global effort.
So you have scientists You have institutions like the CERN, you have universities doing the research, but on the other hand, you also have the industry, and sometimes the business people do not talk very well to the scientists. And that's, I think, is the reason you founded AI Consulting, to bridge scientists and the business world. What are your experience in how do they work together usually?
So just one side note, for example, institutions like CERN, who the primary focus is the fundamental research in the realm of physics, we are contributing as well to the COVID-19 sort of vaccination hunt, but only in the way of putting available parts of our huge computing farms, which we normally use for physics. But of course, now the health has priority. So we have allocated a lot of space, which then sort of computer heavy programs of the actual sort of expert AI on vaccination finding then can use. So that's just a side note. And to your main answer, yes, these two worlds are very different, but it's much more on the level of communication, actually, and learning to speaking the right language, because the physicists typically, being in academia, they have a way of thinking, they have a way of talking about problems, but then if you would then put straight away in a business consultancy, that would not necessarily work well. So that's why I started AI Consulting, where we already know, because from my own expertise, I know what type of problems we are good at solving with sort of the team of some of the brightest minds from in the world which work at CERN. So I know the class of problems we typically can solve, and I did the thorough analysis of the market to see where we could easily apply these talents and where we could actually be beneficial for the customers.
Is that in a certain field of science, so more in physics, or is that also for biochemistry or other fields?
It's in a specific niche, but it's not sort of biologically oriented. It's more in the financing sector. So we are developing risk assessments. We are developing automated algorithms, how to credit score, how to evaluate loans, and these kind of, these are the most typical projects we are solving. However, it's due to the fact that we have a strong connection with the subject matter experts in that particular field. So of course, if we find a person who has very strong and interesting idea how big data and complex mathematical algorithms could help, let's say in biochemistry, there is always a way how to have a discussion and see if there could be a way how to work together, because we are always open for new and interesting challenges.
So what are the biggest drivers for AI? So we talked now about financial institutions, about physics, about pharmaceutical companies. Is also the car industry with the autonomous car a big driver of AI?
Mm-hmm. Of course. Self-driving cars, computer vision, right, that goes hand in hand. And I think every one of us has used AI at least once a day, like just take this, right? Now, it's of course not so much easy to use, but normally when you look for a path to work or to holidays in Google Maps, that's all AI as well. Mm-hmm. So there are many industries, like you said, the financing, for example, or the self-autonomous driving, which where the AI is already well established. Heavy industry, heavy machinery, traffic, you know, for example, trains, planes. There is a very big area where artificial intelligence is used, and that's called predictive maintenance. Because with all the sensors, for example, a train can have, you have many early indicators that maybe a carriage needs to be replaced or that something needs to be fixed. And it's much better for a company, let's say like Deutsche Bahn, to implement AI into the systems, which can say you actually don't need to put this train every month for one day of stop for a general check. You just wait for the sensors to tell you, oh, actually, now you should replace that. Now you should replace this. So that's been going on already since some time, and it's quite powerful. What I would hope that what this whole corona crisis could improve is actually the usage of AI in health, in the healthcare industry. And I'm also connected to the AI for Good initiative, which is driven by the United Nations here in Geneva. And they have a very interesting series of webinaries on how AI can do good things. So, for example, there was a, and that's very relevant for the COVID-19, where you actually should stay home, you should avoid contact. So what's becoming more and more important is to be able to self-diagnose yourself. And it's different than if I'm just randomly Googling myself, oh, I'm sneezing and I am losing taste, than if I have actually in my smartphone a specialized app which can have a, basically a conversation with me. And that's already one AI application, which is called Chatbot, which you may have experienced as well. Just by talking, trying to get an information from your bank, they typically use chatbots. Well, even though sometimes you think that it's a human, it's usually a more or less smart chatbot. So having a chatbot in your iPhone application, which could guide you through a self-diagnosis and then send this information to the database, to another AI, which is in, which would be sitting then at the hospital server, which could then sort of compare, see how your profile compares to the rest of the city and so on, make a thorough analysis and could evaluate how serious basically your case is, you know? And that could help a lot by just A, tracking the population for the spread, but B, also removing some traffic off the phone helplines. I don't know if you try to make a call again to a bank. It was my case yesterday. I spent 30 minutes listening to music before I managed to get through. So if you manage in crisis situation to offload the traffic from the common ways, that's an improvement. And taking it one step farther, for example, if you have this kind of self-diagnosis application, and you think not Geneva, but you could think some remote places in the world, like where it's very difficult to get any medical help, you could see that you could combine this with an autonomously flying drone, which when it gets sort of the order, quote unquote, from the self-diagnosis, it picks up the right medicine and it flies 20, 50 kilometers to the village and then delivers the medicine there and comes back. It's completely contactless. You know, of course, standards need to be developed, and the, especially the self-diagnosis accuracy needs to be very high. But I believe that's a good way to go, and we will see things like this in the future.
So we have now the public debate on the Corona app, and especially in Germany, people are very critical if someone uses their data. It's kind of strange because whenever there is a some action of a company where they can win something, some lottery, they give in all their data. But if they should give in their data on a free base, they're always afraid who can use this data, and isn't it that dangerous? So is scientists talking enough about AI and the positive results and the benefits for the people? Or why are people still so afraid of the digitization and the misuse of data?
It's funny that you put it this way, because I'm sure that Facebook knows about me way more than I would ever put into any governmental app. But it may be a little bit psychological in the sense of, like, you know, of this George Orwell style scenarios of having a government sort of knowing everything about you, just tracking wherever you go and so on. But it's
seeing too much science fiction movies.
But sometimes you see the future there in terms of the technological advancement. Just take the famous Star Trek from the 60s. We have quite a few gadgets which they were using that as science fiction. They are already reality now. But what I wanted to say is, and I know that from firsthand experience, when you really want to develop an app or a functionality like this, there are so many legal aspects of this and sort of cybersecurity aspects of this, then if you wouldn't pass the tightest criteria on these things, you wouldn't be able even to do this type of apps or business. So I would really say, regarding the amount of data there is and the misusability of those, people should be much more careful about what they are putting on Facebook than that there is a Corona app which I would say potentially has a good chance to really track. I think it's usually called something like smart quarantine or something like this, really be able to track who has come to the proximity of someone who has the virus and so on, and be able to really see and contain the spread. So I think that's quite useful. What would need to be assured, and I think that's the key, is really find a way how to make sure that the people have the ability and they trust that when, let's say, after the corona, they hit the delete button, really the information gets deleted from all the servers where it was and so on. It's similar like the GDPR, which is doing a lot in terms of the data protection. So from this perspective, if the app is sort of GDPR compliant, for example, it's the highest level of data protection security you can get at this moment.
People are afraid that they are controlled by governments, by insurance companies and so on. But from a scientific point, and we just talked about the necessity of such an app or the positive results it could have or should have to find out who could be the next corona victim. What is it worth taking the risk to give your data into this app?
Yes, I think it is worth doing it. And it just needs to be carefully manufactured by whoever is responsible, which should be probably the government, in terms of showing people that they are not collecting more that people already publish anyway. You know, you put the example of the insurance. Okay, that's a good one. But what if the insurance gets access to your Facebook page where you are putting pictures how you are jumping off a cliff or how you are down, you know, skiing in the mountains without on the piste or smoking or whatever. So you really, it's much more of a, I would say, marketing campaign from the government explaining that they are not requesting any new information. This information is already there. It's just for this particular purpose. And it has to have all the state-of-the-art ways of securing the cybersecurity itself, because it's two different things. One is misuse of the data you collect, and the other one by, let's say, consent of the person who is issuing the app. And the second one would be that just someone hacks the application, right?
What fields of our daily life will change through AI within the next years?
Many things. Like, as I said before, the AI is already used in many of the industries. There are new coming. I would strongly hope that sort of AI enhanced health system, you know, augmented doctors and these kind of applications could help. And basically, because the best solution is always that you combine the best of the both world, the AI world and the human world. And wherever you need really like some heavy lifting of data and pattern recognition and so on. You use the the AI, and then when you need to use these outputs to make an informed decision, that's where the human comes in. The AI doesn't have the imagination, so it's very broad fields. I would say there will be a rise in entertainment, you know, more fancy Netflixes and these kind of things, because this is on the rise right now. E-learning for sure. Maybe we will experience some big changes of how we educate our children. I can imagine that if many people and many companies realize that it's much more comfortable and basically same productive to work from home, the company realizes that they save a lot on the transportation, right? And flying and everything. So that might have huge changes on the society itself. How far it's going to go, that's very difficult to see. Another field which is really well suited for AI is sort of logistics. So this problem, like you have a supply chain and you need to figure out how to deliver your goods over Germany with, let's say, I don't know, 80 cities, it's quite a non-trivial exercise. Now, what I've seen that there are people talking about effects, something called deglobalization. Maybe we will see less of like the global supply chains, you know, that things get produced in China, then it's transported here, added more value here, transported there. It may be that countries will be much more careful where exactly are the all steps of the production chain, and will try to keep them closer to their place exactly for the situation we've just experienced. Now, process optimization and logistics optimization, that's a big topic for AI and for complex analytics. So that's another way how I think AI will help sort of for shaping the next years.
Will AI help us to solve the climate change problem? Or let's ask me the other way around. Will there be a solution for the climate change without AI?
I don't think so. And it will help us if we want to. AI is always a tool. And again, for example, meteorological forecasts, those calculations are incredibly complex, right? The models of weather, it's chaotic almost. So there is a lot of complex problems in the environment which can be solved sometimes even only through artificial intelligence. Think also like distribution of resources in terms of water. You know, there are certainly areas of Earth where there is a big shortage of water already now or coming. The more data you can collect, the better. And then these days, with the rise of this Internet of Things, you know, every little device can be collecting all kinds of data and sending it somewhere. The more these kind of sensors you put to the places where you really need to get the information from. Imagine like a water dam somewhere in the middle of Africa where it's very difficult to get to. If you have everything controlled remotely or monitored remotely, you are much more in sort of in control of what can potentially happen. So I would say yes, it's definitely a tool how to help to tackle the climate change, but that's the decision to do it. It's not on the AI scientists.
Thank you so much, Richard. There was really great insights into AI, into the Corona app, the risks and the chances. I wish you all the best. Stay healthy and have a good time at CERN.
Bye-bye. Thank you very much. Stay safe. Bye-bye.
The DIKT Expert Talk is produced by the German Institute for Communication and Media Training. You can find the DIKT's advanced training offerings at www.mediantraining-institute.de.